Bonjour, my name is Sandra Bursey, Kagane Dung Mashkiki Ikwe Dijnakaz. My native name is Keeper of the Medicines. I'm an enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa. I currently live in Mandan, North Dakota. I've lived back here in the Bismarck area for a little over 3 years, but I did move here when I was 18, and I just went home for about 9 years to help take care of my mom. Otherwise, I've always lived here, or I did spend a couple of years on Standing Rock as well. I have 5 biological children, 4 daughters who are all grown up and having their own families, and I have 1 son who will be turning 18 in May and graduating from high school. I have 9 biological grandkids, and I say biological because I have stepkids, I have children that I've just adopted into my heart, and it would be impossible to even count all of those kids. I got my bachelor's in social work from the University of Mary in 1985. A long time ago, and then I earned my master's in business administration from Gonzaga University out in Spokane in 2008. Right now, I am the interim director for the Native American Training Institute. Previous to that, I was the training director. I've been there about 3.5 years. I spent most of my career working with people with some type of of disability, developmental disability, alcoholism, mental illness, in the both the private nonprofit sector and for my tribe.
Well, thank you for that, Sandra. Very, very good background, and I can see how this would be very useful in the line of work that we're doing. And so we appreciate you coming here today and sharing your story with us. I know it's a humble thing to do, and it just goes to show the authenticity that you have to helping our Native American people. And so I'll just continue on and asking you a few more questions to kind of share with the community in educating non-Natives and also our Native American people ourselves in understanding us, our culture, our life experiences, our value systems and things. And hopefully it'll help other Native Americans to utilize those tools and those resources so that they can achieve what they want to do in life. So we'll start with your background. You mentioned that you grew up in Bismarck, North Dakota, for the most part of your life. After you turned 18. Okay, so prior to 18, you grew up...
I grew up in the country on the Turtle Mountain Indian Reservation.
Okay, I wanted just to...
So I grew up on a... we raised cattle, horses, pigs, chickens, geese.
Wow. So your family was a farming family.
Yeah, a farming family.
And my husband's from Turtle Mountain too, and his parent or his father, his mother grew them up that way too. And so I'm seeing the commonality of that, the farming background in Turtle Mountain mm-hmm. Reservation. And I don't think very many. Well, I guess I would say non-Natives, but including Native Americans, don't really know that that there's Native Americans who are farmers.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's very interesting. That's thank you for sharing that. So, so you grew up in Turtle Mountain all the way up until the age of 18. Can you share what that was like, and then go into kind of sharing that transition, how it was different moving to Bismarck, and just the differences of society?
Okay. I went to school at first, it was my first school experience was called, it was called Great Walker Indian School. And it was, I imagine it was a preschool, but we had to take long bus ride to get there. And it seemed like there was a lot of us there. It seemed almost it had had the feel of a, of I think what a boarding school would have had. And from there, I went back to public school in Belcourt, and we were bullied on the bus by one particular family. So my mom transferred us when I was in fifth grade, I believe, to the Catholic school. And so I went to Catholic school through eighth grade. I loved it there. Grew up in a real Catholic family, so that, you know, the school fit right in. And but when I Catholic school only went up to eighth grade, so high school had to happen at the public school, and that was kind of a hard transition because we were used to really small class sizes. So at the high school there were more, you know, a lot more people, and there was a kind of a competition between the Catholic school kids and the public school kids. So it took a while to work through that with the kids that I was going to school with. But I worked real hard on my grades. I was the oldest of six kids. When I was about 11, my dad left us alone. My youngest brother was only, I think he was 6 months old. And my mom was an alcoholic, or became an alcoholic after my dad left. So I spent a lot of my time taking care of my brothers and sisters. I took the parent role. And when my mom did sober up when I was about 16 years old, that was hard for me. I also had a baby when I was 15. So I was a very young mother. We really all raised her, my mom and my brothers and sisters. She was just like one of the younger kids. Mm-hmm. Although I was, you know, I was responsible for her, but I had a lot of help raising her. Mm-hmm. And as soon as, when I graduated from high school, I scored really high on my SATs, ACTs, I can't even remember what they were called. And but I scored in the upper 2 percentile in the United States. Wow. So I was offered all these academic scholarships all over the United States. And I chose to go to UND. And I went there without my little girl. And I immediately, within probably 8 weeks, called my mom crying so I could come home. I bombed out at UND. I just, the transition from a small school, even though Belcourt is a fairly large school, it's still small in comparison to UND.
That's really interesting. I had a similar experience. You know, had every intent of carrying on what was taught to me. Go get your degree. Go to college. With all intent in achieving. But once I got there, I was 2 months in, and I was scared the whole time. I remember it very clearly.
I was too.
And I was mostly scared of financially making it. I for me, it was a financial thing. And of course, the cultural thing was all different. It was scary. And so share about that. What would have helped you in that transition to stay in college?
One of the things I think would have helped me is if I had chosen to go to the dorm. I chose instead to live in an efficiency apartment. And I lived alone for the first time in my life. Mm-hmm. I slept in a bed by myself. Me and my sister grew up sleeping in the same bed. Then when Harmony was born, she slept with me. Mm-hmm. So it was really the first time I ever was in my own bed trying to, you know, be a grown-up. And I was still really just a kid.
Right.
So I would always recommend, if somebody's going to go to college, to do the dorm, because then at least you have people around you
That are encouraging. And so then it's important to choose friends wisely as well.
Yes.
So
yes.
You really have to have your mind dead set on achieving that goal to even pick the right friends that are staying on track. Otherwise, we'll veer off to what we're trying to do. If we're trying to party, well, then we're going to go to those friends. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, did you have transportation? I mean, was
I had
that,
a car,
you did have a
yes. I had a
car.
car.
Okay, so many are unfortunate to even have a car. How can you share even how did you have a vehicle at age 18? It's not common for the Native American population, generally speaking.
When I worked, I started working probably for like the CETA program when I was 13 years old. And then when I had Harmony, I could be on AFDC.
Okay.
So I had some income. I worked, I had AFDC. And I just, when Harmony was born, found that I needed to have my own car. So I had a car when I was 15.
And so you saved.
I saved. And then like I said, I had AFDC, which helped tremendously. But
And share what I'm not familiar with
it's aid
AFDC.
to families with dependent children. Now it's TANF.
Okay. So that goes to show that, thank you for sharing that, because that goes to show that that does help a person get on their feet. Not everybody's just using TANF just to get by and live that way of life. Because I think sometimes there's a perception out there with maybe more so the people who don't utilize or never utilize TANF, and that it actually does help low income, single parent types of families.
Yes, it helped me get through college
It helped you
to
get through
get that
college.
first degree that I got. I was on AFDC the whole time.
And how about housing assistance? Was that something that you had? You had an apartment, so I'm just interested in knowing, you
When I
know.
was in co when at UND,
Yeah.
no,
Is.
I don't know if my parents helped me or I don't remember.
Oh,
It
okay.
wasn't the rent I remember wasn't that much. It was a small efficiency apartment.
So you weren't paying rent yourself, so that it
I
must have
might
been.
have been with my TANF or my AFDC.
You just don't
I
remember.
don't remember. That was a
Okay. No,
long
that,
time
yeah,
ago,
I
eh?
know. I'm sorry. I'm kind of taking you way back there,
Yeah.
huh? Okay, well, that's good information. So you went to college. How long did you last, did you say?
Probably about 8 or 9 weeks.
8 or 9 weeks. Okay. So we were about on
Yes,
the
then
same
I went running home.
page.
I
Yeah.
missed my baby. That was part of it too, is that
Oh, that.
I think if you do have a child, you need to try to keep that child with you. So many, I think if they
Oh,
have children
sure.
in high school, then a lot of times somebody else might try, they wanted to help me. They wanted to help me succeed, but being away from her was
Oh, that makes a bigger
so
difference,
heartbreaking.
definitely. It's like a void in your heart the whole time. That would be hard to focus. Interesting point. So you had good intentions. It's just life circumstances can take us away from our goals for a temporary period. Let's see. So you went to college, you went back home. Can you share what your experience was after you went left school and you went back home to take care of your child, your baby? So you're a single parent. And now share what your path was like.
All right, I'm going to be completely honest
Thank
at
you.
this
Yes, we
point.
enjoy that.
When I got back home, I had given my auntie temporary custody of my little girl,
Okay.
and I couldn't get it back right away. I began to party. I began to smoke pot. I really lost my way for a few months. I was my mom. My mom ended up kicking me out, and then I lived with my mom's best friend for a few months. She kicked me out. It was a rough time of my life. I ended up staying with a family, the LaFountain family, and they helped me. They gave me a job. They had a gas station, so I had a job again. And I kind of got my life back on track and decided to move to Bismarck.
Okay. So by that time you were
So I was 18.
18.
I was 18 when I moved here to Bismarck.
And then when you moved here, did you stay with somebody?
There were like five of us girls that all moved here at the same time, and so we would get apartments and share in the cost of an apartment. And that stayed like that for a couple of years. We all stayed together, and then
And it was like working and paying the apartment, pitching in, cost sharing on that. Okay. Yeah. And then
I went to school when I got here. I found a program that was through BSC, which at the time was BJC, I think. Mm-hmm. And it was a secretarial certification program. So I went through that. And then after that, they help you find a job.
Oh, okay.
So my first job here in Bismarck was actually working for your father-in-law, Jim Davis, and he was with the North Dakota Indian Education Association.
Okay.
Located out at United Tribes. So Jim was my first boss.
Oh,
out of the chutes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And so
and I got my little girl back.
You did.
At that point, once I could show that I was making money, you know, that I'd straightened up my life, I got my little girl back.
Oh, that is great. Okay, so, you know, that's definitely showing some resiliency, you know, in that whole process, because you don't never give up.
Right.
Right. I mean, you make mistakes. It's life. We're human. But you come back. And there's an internal value system that's in there that brings you back, would you say?
Mm-hmm.
Can you share what those values are that you looking back in hindsight, you had and have?
Well, I come from a family that is really self-sufficient, goal-oriented, mm-hmm. and supportive if you're on the right track. That, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
I have a bunch of aunties that have been my guides, I'll say, through my whole life. My uncles as well, but my mom and has sisters, and they've always we grew up real close. When I grew up, we were always taught, like, you know, respect your elders. Although we didn't talk about them and say they were the seven teachings of the Anishinaabe, that is really how I grew up, you know, to respect, to be humble, to be brave, different things like that. So, and my mom had already, she had, after my dad left and after she sobered up, my mom went to school, got her bachelor's in, I think she got a bachelor's in teaching or counseling, and she went on to get her master's. So I had my mom as a role model, and I just couldn't imagine not getting, you know, getting a better career, a better job, a better choice. One of the things that drove me at some point was an AFDC worker who was very rude to me and belittled me. And she made me so mad that I told her one day, I said, you know what, one of these days I'm going to be your boss. So you might want to think about being a little bit nicer.
Right.
Yeah. No, so that's she's, good. You know, maybe God put that in my path. I don't know.
But, right. It's kind of like a revelation, right?
Yeah.
Really. And that's a good point, because we need to talk about that kind of thing a little bit. You know, these perceptions of that we're just on the system, not trying to do anything. We're lazy, you know, all those negative misperceptions of Native Americans. And really it's, you know, the uneducated non-Native American who doesn't understand the historical trauma that has been brought into our lives. And so we have to break those cycles. But when we're in that process, we're just judged from the outside. And so they don't really know our intentions, you know, of getting there. So it's a good point about that AFDC worker today would be called a TANF worker, a SNAP, eligibility worker, that kind of thing in today's society. You know, and I think even including going into kind of some of the, you know, the state government employees in their attitudes, I would bring in Department of Corrections even, you know, in their attitudes of holding us in contempt, right? It's kind of the contemptuous kind of treatment that we get. And so I agree. I think we have to step up and say things like that sometimes. You know, we're not being argumentative, but we just kind of stand up for ourselves. And so, you know, I appreciate that. I think, you know, more of us need to do that and not just accept that as a way, because we are oppressed people and we have to break that. And I think if we show that we respect ourselves, that's a beginning point. And so, and I'm glad that you share that, because, you know, my hopes is to educate non-Native Americans to help them understand and be a little bit more compassionate and when they serve us, because we're trying, we're working towards an end goal, and we're trying to break these cycles, but it does take time, and we do need to utilize these services to do that, that we're not just Native Americans that are lazy, that are junks, that are just on these negative statistic data lines. And so we are doing things, and we have a lot of educated Native Americans, but there's the stereotype, and I think we're doing a good job in breaking that in today's world. So, and if you want to add anything else, you know, to that.
I would say that one of the ways that I've found most effective in changing people's viewpoints is just doing it one person at a time. You can't, you know, you can go to a group meeting and talk till you're blue in the face and find that, you know, that things don't change. But when you make friendships and you develop relationships with people of the, you know, who you have stereotypes and racist, you know, that you're racist against. I've done it myself. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that I haven't had racist thoughts or, you know, done some type of discrimination. You know, I have. I think we all do. I think we have to admit that. And then we can work on it. But it has to be really one person at a time.
I really like that, and I really agree with that. And, you know, just being that good person. And so instead of reacting to racism, an incident of racism, whether it's directly or indirectly towards you, that you respond in a way that's respectful. That's otherwise we contribute to what they already think. And, you know, because I know that we're prideful people. And, you know, some of us lost our way even in having dignity, though, because of, you know, it could be addiction, where that's brought us. I mean, if you've been into, say, the Department of Corrections system, in and out of jail, or just beat up by addiction and not being able to quit, and you just start losing your self-esteem, and you get to a point, a very low point in your life, where you just kind of start believing the way people are mistreating you, that you're not worthy and all of these things, those are the ones I really feel for, because I get it and we get it. Many of us get it who've been there. And so we can treat them as a human and treat them with respect just for the fact that they're human. Just for the fact, not about race, not about color, just for the fact that you have a human heart and you have compassion, and we need that. And more in today's society, instead of looking at them as you're bad, you're not contributing to society. Maybe not right now, but maybe if we step out and approach it that way, and we can help them. If we have a more loving approach, we can actually contribute to helping them one person at a time. And I'm so thankful that you shared that, because that is what the Native American Development Center believes, that's our philosophy, is that we're going to help a person one person at a time. Because it just, we have all of these different approaches that are out there, and they're all needed because we need them from all these different angles. But what we see was missing is that just one person at a time, just through love. It sounds cheesy when we say, you know, just love a person, but it's so powerful.
I always wish that people would be critical thinkers when they're in different types of settings. Like, for example, Weight Watchers. Weight Watchers is a group, you know, that you go to lose weight. Well, one of the things that I've realized is that when we're at Weight Watchers, I haven't been there lately, but when we're there, people, non-native people, will be talking about how they saved their points or whatever so that they could drink on weekends and have wine or, you know, whatever type of drink. And they're all laughing and they think it's, you know, it's so cute or whatever. I don't know. And then there'll be a group of native people, women mostly, that if we were having the same conversation about saving our points so that we could drink, the perception of those two things would be different. No matter, you know, where you're at, we would be looked at like, oh my God, you're saving your points so you can drink.
Right.
You know, but the non-Indian can just sit there and giggle and laugh about it. You know, it's those types of situations where, you know, we have to look at it critically and change how we think about one another. You know, so that's just an example.
You know, and there is, I don't know if you've heard of this author. His name's Daniel Goldman.
No.
I am so with you. I'm just excited. And I did this research in here in my own personal development, being aware, learning how to change my own thinking. There was a big sense of freedom when I discovered in my sobriety path, when I stopped drinking and learning that reading books, reading self-help books, you know, I'm involved in the Christianity way, so I read the Bible, but there was a discovery that that you had to be mindful of how you think. So it's assessing our own thought process and challenging it to change it. So you take a self-assessment, for example, of how you think. You really just start monitoring your thought process and your interactions. So there's power in that, because then you start discovering that, wow, I really just thought negative for a long time and not really paid attention to that. And realizing that the power comes and the freedom comes in realizing that it starts with your thought process. And they call that today as mindfulness.
Mindfulness, yes. And Michael Yellowbird does a lot of work on mindfulness.
Yeah. Okay, I'll have to get in touch with him, because that's a huge part in this discovery process. And then you have to be able to be mindful of your own self thoughts to be able to start changing them to good thoughts, which results in positive attitude and behaviors.
I'll tell you a quick story that made me realize how where I was sometimes in my own thinking, and it really opened up my eyes. I was at a powwow down in Fort Yates one day with my children. They were small then, you know, 9, 10. There must have been five of them and me, and we're sitting on in one of the stands there. And I had just enough money to buy me and my kids each one of those freshly made lemonade drinks that are so delicious. So we're sitting there in the hot sun drinking our lemonade, and I see one of the men that they talk about used to hang around in what they called Cirrhosis Park. So they're chronic alcoholics. You know, they're homeless, they live outside, winter and summer. And he's sitting down the bleachers a little bit, and he's looking at me and my kids over and over and over. And I was like, oh man, he's going to come up here and he's going to ask me for my lemonade. I just know it.
Yeah.
So here he turns to his friend, and I noticed then that he has eight quarters in his hand, and he